You are listening to Dark Dive.
Something out there waiting for us.
Welcome to Dark Dive. I'm your host, Jesse. This is Joe, and we are Hellbent Holler. And we wanted to thank you guys for joining us on our third episode of Dark Dive. We're going to go into kind of a dark and creepy direction. So
we're going to dive into the dark.
We're going to dive into the dark. We tend to gravitate towards subjects in that kind of area. So
yeah, there's a lot of Disneyfication of the cryptid topic that goes on out there, and
we want to kind of avoid that.
Yeah, so, and focus on maybe the more realistic and unfortunately more unpleasant aspects of the phenomena.
So. Right. So you're getting the Hellbent Holler and Dark Dive perspective on this subject. But we wanted to talk about today the cryptid predation upon mankind.
Hey, we're going to name this episode. We like to have catchy little titles for it. We're going to name this The Bane of the Race of Men, which is from Beowulf, which is an early tale of something coming out of the hills, something big, dark, scary, and slaughtering indiscriminately. So
it's a tale as old as time.
Exactly right. So anyway, one of the things we're going to focus on is kind of the evolution of the less pleasant encounters that people have had with these creatures and how in the past they seem to operate a lot more openly and operate a lot more boldly, I guess you could say. And nowadays they're a little bit more secretive. I mean, there's still unpleasant things that happen. People go missing, people end up dead. But it seems like it's more opportunistic now as opposed to just operating at will like it used to. And we're going to maybe explore some reasons for that, maybe discuss it. Maybe there's a reason that's beyond our understanding for it. Maybe it has something to do with the advent and proliferation of human technology. But let's dive into it.
So, yeah, let's go. So we're going to go to the beginning. Let's go all the way back. So the records that we have, the earliest records we have of any kind of cryptid creatures are cave paintings.
Yeah, cave paintings. I mean, people drawing on walls.
Recording their history.
Stick figure humans fighting with, being killed by, creatures that are larger. There's pictures of oversized stick figures with horns. It doesn't really detail any pleasant encounters with these things that obviously aren't humankind.
No, but you would often see paintings of, like you said, horns, large teeth, an open maw, just these giant creatures. And these are, you know, there's a lot of people who write off these, these creatures as just a misinterpretation.
Exactly. And these are people that lived in much closer to nature than we do.
Yes.
They knew what bears looked like.
Well, that's another thing. That's another sticking point with me is when people say that Native Americans or First Peoples do not know what a bear is because they misidentify a bear. They misidentify a bear as a Sasquatch. And they're like, oh, no, they were just seeing
You live in the suburbs. You're misidentifying bears. These people live very close with nature.
They were very aware of their surroundings. They're very aware. They are a part of their environment much more than we are a part of our environment now. They lived, they breathed, they ate, they lived, they died, everything right there, part of nature. They know what a bear looks like. They know what a Sasquatch looks like. They know the difference between these things. So that's kind of a sticking point with me when people just say, oh, these are just dumb savages. Absolutely not. Yeah. These people are one with their environment. They are more intelligent than we are when it comes to anything to do with nature or how the world works.
Well, that would be like one of us misidentifying a car now, coming and going, oh, I just saw this giant metal snake on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, we know what cars look like. We see them all day, every day.
Absolutely.
Know? And it's odd because obviously these people were taking the time to describe what more than likely were their encounters with other things, and they weren't good. I mean, and that goes right into mythology. I mean, the basis for pretty much every cultural myth out there is mankind striving against creatures from somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? I mean, pretty much every mythology has a story of something that's not human, that's causing death, causing destruction, and someone has to, you know, become the person of the hour and, you know,
rise up
to fight it. But
become a hero.
But that's the basis for almost everything. Greek mythology, Norse mm-hmm. mythology, Native American mythology, Asian mythology, everything has these central themes of something from somewhere else that's not human that has to be stopped. And it's obvious that people from different cultures were having similar experiences with these things, you know, that were not pleasant, that were not good, mm-hmm. you know. There are a few examples, obviously, of things that were maybe a little bit more beneficial to mankind, but those are the minority, definitely. I mean, generally there's monsters out there, and these things did not have very good intentions towards mankind at this point. So I think that starts with cave paintings and then goes through, it really goes through until what we begin kind of start to think of the advent of almost like modern civilization. You know what I'm saying? I mean, these things used to hunt mankind at will. But something held them back. I mean, that's the thing that has always kind of struck me is, look at Sasquatch or even Dogman reports nowadays. They're so physically gifted that it seems like if they wanted to, they could have hunted early man
to extinction.
To extinction.
Yeah. For sure.
Unless,
but why did they not? Why, if these creatures were apex predators, why did they not hunt man?
Might have had something to do with the numbers. I mean, Neanderthals could work together and take down a mastodon.
That's true. That's true.
So maybe these things just don't have the numbers capable. You know, they don't have the numbers to be capable to take down mankind at that point.
That's true.
But they still seemed like they operated a lot better. You know, a lot more open at this point. I think you get down to, you know, maybe the Beast of Shevadon.
So the Beast of Jevadon, that's one of the prime examples. That's one of the, I guess, earlier examples of a mass casualty. You don't want to say a mass casualty event. I guess you could say it. It occurred between 1764 and 1767 in the Jevadon region of France. And this was more of a rural area, a lot of farmers. There were a few aristocrats, but it was mostly farmers. This is post Seven Years' War. So you have some of the aristocrats and some of the people coming back from the Seven Years' War. But it's mostly farmers. It's mostly simple people that live in the country, the French countryside. Jevadon is more of a swampy, boggy area. But there was a creature that emerged in 1764 and started attacking the townsfolk. Normally, at the beginning, it started attacking very, very vulnerable people. So it'd be young people around the age 13 to about 18, and women mostly when it first started attacking people. But these are the people. Again, this is a society that has oxen and sheep, and so they have them out in the field. They're you know, watching over their
shepherds,
livestock.
Basically, yeah.
Shepherds.
So,
yes,
yeah, shepherds.
Thank you. But they're watching over their livestock. So they're out there, they're on the field, they're on the edge, they're outside of the village. They're usually alone doing this. So that was a perfect opportunity for this creature to come up and just snag people and murder people. One of the first girls that was attacked by the Beast of Jevadon just survived the attack and described it as a large canine wolf-like creature that had red fur and then a long stripe, a black stripe down its back, and a large head. And some of the descriptions describe it as being upright, some of it describe it as being on all fours, but in every description, this is a giant wolf creature.
That doesn't look normal.
Doesn't look normal. It's not a wolf. They don't say this is a wolf. There's been a lot of attacks. There's been a lot of wolf attacks in that area. So these people, again, like the Native Americans who are familiar with their surroundings and their local area, the citizens of Jevadon are familiar with wolves. They've seen wolves before. They're familiar with them. They have experience with them. They've killed them before.
One of the sources I saw said that they estimated that thousands of people in that maybe not portion of France, but that half of France would die every year because of wolf attacks. It was an ongoing thing. So these people
are familiar with
it. They've seen wolves. They've seen what wolves can do up close. And they're saying this is not a wolf.
So what made this different? What made these attacks different is the description of the creature. It was described as a huge, absolutely huge, and highly aggressive canine creature, sometimes on two legs.
Yeah.
So this sounds just like what we think of as our modern iteration of the Dogman. There was a huge effort mobilized to take this down. The townspeople tried to take it down, but were unsuccessful. As soon as the monarch heard about what was happening in the Gévaudan region, basically an army was dispatched.
Yeah, what happened is they had about 30,000 people at the peak out there looking for it, and where the villagers, the locals had tried to take it down, but they were being directed by people in the army and some of the nobility in the area,
yeah,
who maybe weren't as familiar with the terrain and whatnot. There was one case of the guy that ended up killing it actually got imprisoned because he tried to convince some people not to go into a certain area because it was too swampy. Well, they ended up getting stuck, and they blamed it on him and threw him in jail.
Yeah.
So you maybe didn't have the best people leading the search to begin with, and I think that hampered the efforts for it. Now, like we said, they had, 500 deaths?
Yeah, the scale of this, I mean, again, this went on for years. This creature was attacking and killing at will for years. Again, over three years that this happened. And you're looking at over 600 attacks, over 500 deaths, countless injuries, and then not to mention the livestock loss in the process, the time, the effort, the money that was put towards the effort to kill the creature. This was a huge, huge deal. This was absolutely huge. The monarch actually decreed that they had to cancel all of their holidays at one time because they wanted all of the villagers to spend any free time they had when they weren't farming or shepherding or anything like that. They wanted them out there looking for the beast because they needed to get a handle on this situation. And what ended up happening is the beast was killed.
Well,
but
the king sent his bodyguard there. The guy came in, killed a large wolf, went, hey, it's all done, got a reward, went back to the capital. And then the killing started right back up again.
Yeah.
And then they send word back to the capital, and they're like, nope, we've already killed that. Sorry, you're mistaken. Because they didn't want to fool with it anymore. They'd moved on to the next story at that point. And that's when the locals basically were left to their own devices, and somebody killed it.
Yeah.
You know, somebody was able to shoot the thing. And then for me, this is almost like a crossover, where before maybe they operated a little bit more openly back then, and then somebody was able to shoot it. And there's different stories that got attributed to it later. That's where we get the idea of silver bullets coming from. The guy supposedly used melted down blessed medallions and a large caliber rifle to take it down.
Yeah.
But you don't really see anything on a wide scale after this.
Yeah. This is one of the biggest killings, mass killings, committed by a cryptid that is on record. Yeah. I mean, this is absolutely huge. Side note, though, if you want to watch a really good movie that is not exactly historically accurate but is an excellent film, it's called Brotherhood of the Wolf. It's got a really cool occult and cult tinge to it as well. Joe,
you got Frenchmen using kung fu to fight.
Yeah,
the,
you do have
Frenchmen
using kung fu. It's great. It's wonderful. Do recommend Brotherhood of the Wolf.
But maybe that response, that overwhelming response, and then the weapons that were used is why you didn't really see any open mass attacks or killings after that. I mean, 500 is a lot of people for
a
sparsely populated area like that in that time frame. But at the same token, some commoner ends up taking it down with a rifle.
Yeah.
You know, it's similar to the human Bigfoot War of 1855 or the Choctaw. We're having at first animals taken, and then something started taking their children, and they got up a war party and went after it. The guy's name was Joshua LaFleur. He took a war party after it. They thought it was human bandits. And they, they kind of tracked, whatever had left.
And they stumbled upon a gruesome scene.
Piles of dead bodies everywhere and three or four Sasquatch-like creatures. And they took them down. They had sharp buffalo rifles, and they Well, Joshua LaFour tried to fight one with a pistol and a sword and was decapitated. And the rest of them just hung back and then just dumped bullets into these things and killed them. So, and then you don't really see after that any widespread attacks on like settlements or villages or anything like that. It's almost like the technology had come to the area where people before didn't have the means to defend themselves. And now all of a sudden there's a message sent that they're not as easy of a target as they used to be at this point. So
are these attacks and these responses by people and actually the ultimate destruction of the cryptid, are these turning points? Are these turning points in history where it goes from mass predation by cryptids where they're able to kill at will, but now humans have the technology where they can fight back? And so is that a turning point for the creatures to maybe rescind back into the darkness and into the shadows?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they were in the shadows of the darkness at first. I mean, they seemed like they I mean, look at a lot of the Indian Native American like terms for them, you know, evil god of the woods,
cannibal the trickster, giant,
cannibal demon,
yeah,
the disaster, you know, one of them calls them, devil of the forest. And like on a side note, it's not just Sasquatch type creatures. You know, the Cherokee had Olonga Doglala, which was it's like spirit with knife teeth, I think is the translation. And it was an upright wolf that hunted along a particular river. And if people went there, you know, to gather water, to, you know, to fish, to whatever, they were taken, never seen again, killed. But it still seemed like it happened more often than it did nowadays, you know what I'm saying? That these things were they weren't coming into a village in the middle of the day. They were still around the perimeter, around the edges of society, but they were just operating so much more frequently.
Yeah.
It seems like until, you know, something happened to change the cannibal giant and what a lot of people consider Sasquatch nowadays, something that's like really shy and reclusive.
That is rarely, rarely seen.
But might still be snatching people when the opportunity presents itself.
That was an interesting thing about the dog. So what was it?
Olonga Doglala.
So, Olonga Doglala. Yeah. That's kind of
Doglala. I have to look it up. I think I got it pronounced right.
That's kind of interesting. Yeah. Just as a side, is what you think about the modern dog man phenomenon is that it's more of a modern phenomenon because you don't hear a lot about that. Except for this is a perfect example of there are dog-headed upright creatures that have been around forever.
Yeah.
There's the cynocephali that is from long ago, the Greeks. But it was said that they were like an organized faction of humanoids almost, but they were just dog-headed people. Like they had a culture and they had an organized structure.
But they weren't as indiscriminate. They weren't, like you said, they were civilized.
Yeah.
It's almost like that was like an outlier for
instances of trade. Allegedly, there were instances of trade.
Yeah, they would trade like pelts and meat and stuff like that. They couldn't forge weaponry, so they traded with certain places for weapons. They were very warlike. But, you know, also, too, in the Uwari, there's rock carvings of what looks like depicts a man with a dog's head.
Yeah.
So there's instances of that.
You've got Anubis. That goes, I mean, and we're going way back here. I mean, it's just.
But I mean, what happens is that you've got people that were on the continent that were basically at a Stone Age level of technology. And it's a big difference to have a few guys with stone tipped lances or even stone tipped arrows and bows. And then you've got, you know, fast forward a few hundred years. You've got guys with like buffalo rifles hanging back, just, you know.
The great equalizer.
Yeah, exactly. And that might be it. It might just be the fact that our technology got us to the point where these things had to change their patterns at that point. They had to change how they behaved, how they acted. They still predate upon people, but they're more selective and they have to wait for that opportunity. There's not as many people going down to the river to get water. Human settlements are larger. Everything's a lot better lit than it used to be. But there's still a lot of people going into the wilderness. There's still a lot of people in rural areas. There's still a lot of people who just happen to get a little too close to the edge.
Yeah.
And then they're just taken and they're gone, you know? So, you know, there's that also, there's that, native legend up near our research area. that you have looked into?
Yeah, actually there is. We have an area that we've been working out of for, gosh, what was it, over two years now.
Yeah, about 3 years now.
Yeah, so. About 3 years now. And a lot of our videos take place there. We've been going up there and researching and filming for a long time. That's where I had those eyes behind me. Mm-hmm. That's where we had the occult activity going on in the woods. That's where we found what appear to be huge Sasquatch prints. And in addition to that, tiny little prints.
Childlike prints in the middle of winter.
In the middle of the winter, like in the middle of the woods, way out there. That's also the area where we've seen those lights just floating through the woods. And gosh, we heard that scream. It's just one thing after another where that bluff charge occurred. Mm-hmm. That area is so active. It's in so many of our videos.
We just got that email recently.
Yeah.
Where a guy was cluing us into some stuff. And we have yet to hear back from you. He obviously watches our videos.
Yeah.
If you're seeing this, we've been trying to get back in touch with you. Please reach back out to us. You can contact us on our website like you did previously. Our email address is on there. But please get back in touch with us.
We would really appreciate that. Yeah, really want to talk to you.
That.
But in that area, there is a legend of a race of, I wouldn't say people, but the Cherokee described them as humanoid. But they are a fire-breathing race that protect the entrances of caves, and they live inside the mountain, and they protect the mountain.
And you were told not to go up there.
You're told not to go up
because
there.
Because they would take you. Mm-hmm. You were told not to go anywhere alone near that territory.
And you can hear the thundering sounds from the mountain. And mm-hmm. we've heard these sounds. We've actually captured them in some of our videos. I think, what was it, Breaks, Booms, and Howls, that video. You can hear the loud, just it almost sounds like something large is being taken into the sky and then dropped several times. Mm-hmm. But there's legends about that. So that's been going on for hundreds and hundreds, possibly thousands of years.
Yeah, before European settlers landed.
For sure,
And came into that area. And then after they were there as well. But it seems, again, that when a higher level of technology shows up on the scene, these things retreat back a little bit more even at that point.
The tactics change.
Yes. So, yeah. And you know, that there's a parallel to that. If you look at like European folklore, mm-hmm. If you look at European folklore, there's a lot of parallels between what we consider fairy tales nowadays and stuff that people are still experiencing. Don't follow the lights into the woods. You'll go missing. Don't follow the lights in the woods. You'll get taken. You know, mm-hmm. Don't travel alone at night, don't go out at certain times of the year, blah, 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 blah. And what was the defense against that? It was cold iron.
Yeah.
It was forged iron where
advancement in technology.
A man wasn't using just sticks and stones to defend himself anymore. He had the ability to alter the natural materials around him and make something better and something more. And that was dangerous to these creatures.
Yeah.
That they had vulnerability to it. So now you have an even larger leap to firearms. And that seems like that caused an even greater retreat back from mankind. But they're still there. They're still right on the edges. They're still just, you know, they're still doing this stuff. I mean, if you look into, like we talked about, the Beast of Jebedon and then the Bigfoot, you know, Choctaw War of 1800s, those were on a pretty large scale. Those were villages being attacked.
Yes.
Several people being killed. 500 dead in France. They find a mound. I mean, they smelled the area before they came upon it because there were so many dead bodies there.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of gone into more, it's still happening, but it's more secretive and it's more opportunistic.
The only modern or semi-modern examples you can think of a mass attack would be, I mean, you have examples like the Ape Canyon incident. But
what's weird about Ape Canyon is those things were apparently immune to gunfire, which opens up another question.
But Ape Canyon was very, very isolated. You just have the miners there. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very isolated place. But it is a mass attack. But it's a siege type thing.
So,
it was a siege, yeah. It was basically a siege on the miners.
Well, jump across to like another type of entity. You've got the Hopkinsville Goblin.
Yeah, that was another siege.
That family was under siege that night.
Yeah.
And again, you're in a stressful situation. You're seeing things that aren't supposed to exist. You're in fear of your life. You're just trying to get a grasp on what you're seeing. It's just so incredible. You can't quite comprehend it. You could maybe miss when you're trying to shoot But the Hopkinsville goblins, apparently, they know they hit them because they fell down and then just rebounded back up.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that if some of these things are completely just impervious, why are they staying? Why are they staying hidden? Why don't they just operate in middle of the day, do whatever they want to do, because they know that we don't have the ability to hurt them? That's what doesn't make sense about it.
Unless there's a whole numbers game there, that there's so few of them that if they operated in the open, if they came out in the open, that there's so many of us and so few of them that they could easily be overtaken. If they come out of, like I said, these, a lot of these instances, these people are isolated. These are isolated areas. These are small groups of people or single people who are out and they're getting attacked. But if their numbers are so low and they come out closer to humanity, our numbers are, could be overwhelming. It could be, like you said, you know, Neanderthals, Native Americans, they could take down a mammoth in sheer numbers. It was sheer numbers was the main advantage there. Well, it wasn't necessarily the technology. So if they're impenetrable to gunfire, maybe they're not impenetrable to just sheer numbers, you know, of people coming after them.
But it's just, and it's going through that, because again, that seclusion aspect of it, that let's look at some of the more like famous modern cases.
Okay.
And David Pilates is always about that point of separation where somebody has become separated from their group, or they're just alone in general, and that's when it happens. Like, look at like Dennis Martin. He went out behind a bush, his father said, and then he was just gone.
Yeah.
And how that's different from a lot of missing 411 cases is that other family saw something running with something over its shoulder.
Almost that looked as if, like a large hairy beast carrying
a kid over
its
shoulder.
A child over its shoulder, yeah.
You've got, you know, the LBL massacre that we obviously have delved into a great deal.
Yeah.
A family that is away from civilization. Now, they were the only ones supposedly in that RV park if this happened.
So another instance of isolation. You have a family of four who are by themselves. It's just them four. By themselves going out, going on this camping trip. But there's, according to the story, there was really nobody else in the park at that point. And so they're in the woods. They're isolated. And that was a perfect opportunity for the beast of LBL, or beasts, it could be two. There's a couple of different versions of it where there's one or two. But it was a perfect opportunity for these creatures to come and just massacre this family, kill this family.
And that's the thing, is that there was no witnesses around. And this seems to happen when there's no witnesses. Now, if you go on a lot of just the accounts and the experiences people have, these things seem so physically gifted that there has to be something that makes them hesitant or a little wary of us. Maybe it's the numbers, maybe it's, you know, the weaponry that we have access to, but it still happens. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's been armed people who've gone missing before. Of course, there's the David Pilates rules, you know, don't go alone. Carry a personal locator beacon.
Go armed.
Go armed at that point. And
that's why we go armed every time we go out.
And that's where, you know, but think about it. Think of how many people go out into the national forests, into the woods and everything like that, and they're just unarmed. They might carry bear spray, they might do something like that, but I guess that normalcy bias hits them where they just think that nothing bad has happened to me yet, so therefore nothing bad's ever going to happen. And I think that might factor into it a bit. The fact that you know, you go out and you're just a hiker or a camper, and you're by yourself, or maybe you're with a small party and you've gotten separated from them, and then you just cross paths with something that's looking for an opportunity for a quick meal or to take you for another purpose.
And you are walking, and nature is so beautiful and so wonderful and so great. Oh, look at this deer over here. But you don't realize that nature will kill you. Nature will kill you so quickly.
Yeah, it always seems like it's conducive. It only happens if circumstances are conducive to the thing not being discovered.
Yeah.
Not being seen. And
like a crime of opportunity.
Yeah, and you know what? And what happens that we never hear about? Because if they're going after specifically people who are secluded, people who are alone and all that, this might be happening more often than what you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's no evidence of
there's
it.
No reports.
Yeah, there's no report.
Therefore, nobody knows about it.
Because it did happen in seclusion at that point. I mean, you've got cases like, you know, Corey Godsey in Kentucky back in 2020, who was the kid who they first said he died as a result of an unknown predator. And then it became, well, he was killed by a large dog. And then it became that he was killed by a pack of dogs. And it's a really rural area, you know. And yeah. people were telling him that there's these, you know, that there's these strange dogs that live in caves that come out. And then the story kind of dismissed that. And then they said that the authorities set up trail cams and found a pack of wild dogs that were living in a cave system.
And then what happened to the story after
Well, they
that?
Claimed that they captured the dogs and took them in for testing and then went case closed.
And then you never hear about it again. Yeah. That, oh, well, we've got it now. But it's...
But not living in a cave. They were talking about how they're living in the cave system. And, you know, that part of Kentucky is just riddled with caves, old mines, yeah. everything like that. And, but again, somebody who was vulnerable, you know, in a non-populated area.
Yeah.
And then was just taken at this point. And that seems to be it. It seems to be it doesn't come out and grab you in the sight of your village anymore while you're, you know.
It has to be a lot more elusive.
A lot more secluded. And so what's changed on that? I mean, again, you know, it might be the fact that just the weaponry that most people, well, I won't say most people have available to them because, again, we talked about a lot of people not going out armed, but what could be brought to bear against them is just changed so much at this point. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Instead of having some guys on horseback with bows and arrows and this and this and this, you're going to have men with guns and dogs and this and this and this. And it's...
You can have a volume of response.
And what you know what, though, is this seemed to happen. That kind of leads to that there's some intelligence behind this.
Well, yeah.
And there's some sort of direction that's taking place because it... Everybody's playing by the same rules nowadays, you know what I'm saying? So it's not like, you know, you don't really have a lot of open behavior by these things. So it was almost like there was a decision made, hey, everybody needs to back off. And that opens up a whole other kettle of fish.
I mean, and I think this is something that we touch on a lot of the time is we'll touch on that we think that a lot of these things are connected. You mentioned before that they don't seem to operate amongst our laws of physics or...
Exactly. So, yeah.
So, but that is also the same with UAPs, the UAP phenomenon. And it seems there's a lot of parallels between the UAP phenomenon, Sasquatch, paranormal activity, and it's you can't have tunnel vision when it comes to these things because there's so many overlapping characteristics of these sightings and experiences that the only conclusion I can come to is that these things have similarities and connections and that they are all connected and possibly from the same source, possibly, you know, from a similar source, but they're so varied in their physical descriptions. That's what's so weird about it.
Well, you know, what if these things aren't, I mean, we don't think that they're just like natural undiscovered creatures. It appears to be that they are something from quote unquote somewhere else.
Yeah.
But come here, does whatever they're going to do, and then goes back to wherever it came from. So just like UAPs don't seem to be, you know, you have the observables. They don't seem to be bound by the constraints of the physical world, the way that we understand them. They don't behave in a way that it lines up with our understanding of physics, okay? So you've got these things that are solid. They're showing up on radar. They're giving off heat. They show up on FLIRs, everything like that. But they don't behave in a way that material should.
They're going at incredible speed.
Transmedium, they go into water without being destroyed.
They are incredibly agile in their movement. They can turn on a dime while going at incredible speed.
So they're doing things that seem to be impossible, that don't line up with how we understand the physical world works. But that's what's happening on the ground, too. Maybe these things are impervious to gunfire. Maybe some of them are, some of them aren't.
I mentioned in the last episode about the Project Stargate person that contacted Linda Goffrey, the person that was involved in the Stargate project, where they were talking about remote viewing Dogman and how their fur is some kind of it's like a bio armor that it defends against gunfire, and it's a bio armor.
That's crazy. I mean, the whole thing's crazy, I guess. But I mean, it's something that I always took the standpoint that even if they were from somewhere else, that when they came into our reality, our plane of existence, however you want to do it, that they would be bound by the same physical laws, that if they could touch you, that you could touch them back.
Right.
Maybe that's not the case. I mean, maybe that's not the case. Maybe that's there is more of a parallel between this and UAPs, and that they are somehow able to touch and affect the environment, but we can't touch them back. And if we can't seem to hurt them. But again, that goes back to that if that's the case, then what's holding them back from operating so much more openly than what they are? You know, something.
Maybe it's the mode of touch. You know, maybe it's, you know, how maybe firearms don't work against them in a way, but, you know, maybe other things do. Like in Dune, you know how.
That's a good point.
So, you know, in Dune, you have to use. You have to use a blade because you have to go slow to get through the shield. You know, that's kind of a...
Well, I mean, that means...
Is that weird to say?
Some sort of weird technology like that. Or you get into, like, just complete, like... I don't know, man. That's like very supernatural things that are, like, not... You can't affect them with gunfire, but they can get affected by, like, edged weapons and stuff like that. That's just... That's...
You know where I stand. I stand. I'm in the camp of that it's all supernatural. I think it's...
Yeah, but at the same token, again, if it's physical and it can touch you and it can hurt you and it can kill you, you should... It's physical. It's not immaterial. You should be able to affect it back at this point. And it looks like that happens sometimes. And then
you mean
times
if it bleeds, we can kill it?
Kill it, yeah, exactly. So, but we... It doesn't seem like it always operates like that. But again, even when it doesn't operate like that, there's something there that just seems to make them elusive. And maybe it's the trickster type thing. Maybe it's the fact that that it doesn't follow the same set of rules on purpose. And that maybe it behaves in a way that you doesn't expect, that you don't expect it to, in order to keep you off balance and in order to kind of further the phenomena's effect upon humanity.
And as soon as you start to figure out its patterns, it completely changes. It's just a complete chaos element.
You know, Jacques Vallée's control method, where he thinks that the phenomena behaves in a manner that's inconsistent with human logic in order to have an overreaching kind of control upon our culture, our behavior, everything like that. Maybe this is just an aspect of it. Maybe it's that... I don't know. It's just, it's weird. But again, you've got such a weird mix of this. You've got stories where these things are shot and nothing happens. And then stories of, well, they hung back on their horses and they dumped bullets into these things until they killed all three of them.
Yeah.
But again, you go back to this. I mean, 1855 wasn't that long ago, man. If they, you
not
know,
in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. No, absolutely not.
So it wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things. You have other stories where these things, you know, in the Siege of Hanovia, however you pronounce it. I mean, supposedly those dudes shot and killed a few of them and then claimed that the others came in and got their bodies and took them out, you know?
And that there was like a huge... Wasn't that the one where there was like a huge cover-up with that story? Was there a huge cover-up with that or no?
I don't remember a cover-up. They had people come out that tried to... they had people from like Bigfoot research organizations that came out and tried to take, they offered to buy the property from them because they wanted to study it. And the guys were just like, we don't want it studied. We just want it gone.
They just want to get away from the whole thing. Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing is that then you have the stories that you hear that make its way to you a lot of times, especially with like Dogman. It seems like it wants to frighten you, but it doesn't do anything more. But I guess the cases where it does more than frighten you, there's nobody left to report that something different happened.
Yeah, if you get murdered and taken out of your tent, then you're not really going to go file a report on
that. You're not going to be able to file that report. So when people go, well, there's really no reports of people being attacked. Well, there's no reports of people being attacked
because the
and
people
living
who were
to place
attacked.
That report. Yeah. So
you know, going back to that area where we've been researching, and it's in a lot of our videos, we've been researching there for years. I'm doing more and more deep research into the area, and I'm starting to look at missing people and unidentified remains that were found in the area. And you would not believe the amount of just partial skeletons that have been found in the area and then just straight up dead bodies found in the area over the past, you know, 100 or so years. There's unidentified remains after unidentified remains of people, that partial, just parts of skulls just sitting in the woods. There's even some with like, where they have their effects with them. They've not been robbed or anything like that. And they can't determine, you know, that they were shot or stabbed or strangled. It was just that these people were just just killed somehow in the woods, and there's no evidence of a crime taking place.
And I mean, people, I mean, it's easy to die of exposure, not take enough food, get lost, do anything like that. The elements knew you in, you weren't prepared for the cold weather, the hot weather, anything like that. People can be responsible for it.
Of course,
yeah. You just run across the wrong maniac in the woods one day.
But at this level, I mean, there's just the area we're in. There's a lot of bodies. There's a lot of
And obviously you can go, well, that person just died of exposure, or they died of this, they died of that. Well, why is it happening so much more here?
Yeah. Concentrated in one area.
And we're in the south, you know, the southeast. It's not like we're out west where it's just, I mean, unimaginable distances to cover. I mean, we're pretty remote where we go into research, but if worst came to worst, we could just throw a pack on and start walking. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it may take us a couple days on foot, but we're going to find
somebody. There's also plenty of water. And the winters are not as, it's not a Montana winter here. You know?
And I mean, I know exposure can kill you at less temperature extremes than what you expect, but again, not to this level. And why this particular area? The particular area we're talking about, there's not a lot of recreation activities that go on there.
No.
I mean, there's like a couple of trails that are not maintained and they're not used, but there's no campgrounds through there. There's an area to hunt at nearby that nobody goes to because there's no deer there, which nobody seems to understand why there's no animals in that area. We go up there, sometimes we don't hear birds, we don't hear anything, you know what I'm saying? But it's something about that particular area that people are going missing or meeting their end more often than other areas where you would expect
it. It seems very statistically impossible for that many people to go missing in that area, or unidentified remains being uncovered in that area. It's very strange.
You know, people get that normalcy bias where they're either unfamiliar with being outdoors a great deal. They're not used to being in the woods or anything like that. But they've been Disney-fied. Everything's going to be great. You know what I'm saying? There's going to be little bluebirds flying around my head singing songs, and they go out and they're unprepared and they're not armed. Okay. Yeah. Or you have people that are maybe so used to being in the woods, they start taking it for granted and they don't go out armed. Even if you do go out armed, I mean, a lot of times people are just carrying like handguns, hollow point ammunition, maybe. These things are vulnerable. Again, Sharp's rifles in the 1855 is what they used to take it down. High caliber weapons that they used to take down buffalo. There's a big difference between that and somebody with like a 9mm with hollow point rounds that maybe these things have, they are impervious to certain types of harm, but maybe they've got like rhino skin and hollow points and stuff like that don't do well. I mean, that's why we carry... You know, we carry 10mm with hard cast ammunition. You know, we go out almost like a grizzly guide would go out.
We carry a lot more than that.
But I mean, that's...
But we do carry what a grizzly guide would carry, 10mm. And that's, I mean, that's a lot of firepower. And I think it's absolutely necessary to do that because we honestly believe these creatures are out there. We honestly believe that there is something in the woods, and it's definitely taking people. I mean, you can just look at the evidence before you and that something is happening. And what we do is dangerous, and we know it's dangerous, but we're going out there and going into these areas specifically. So I think it's really important that we go out there armed, because if you think that there's a, you know, 10-foot tall creature out there that is possibly taking and murdering people,
or an 8-foot tall upright,
or an upright canid,
predator. So
why would you not go armed if you truly believe these things are out there? So we always go armed. We always have guns, knives, backups on us, you know. Because we take it seriously. But, you know, a side note on that is these are a physical threat, but we've also blessed our weapons, you know. We take holy water. We take black salt.
It's like we're running around like the Winchesters out
there
sometimes.
We are running around like
the
Winchesters, but we do take, you know, we take spiritual protection as well because we don't know if these things are of a supernatural or a spiritual bent. We don't know in what... We don't know what dimension they walk in and out of. We don't know where, if they can pass through the veil. We don't know enough right now. So we like to try to be prepared for any sort of instance. So yeah, we do kind of walk around like the Winchesters.
And
in
even
the woods.
Going out paranoid like that. I mean, it's still, I mean, there's a David Pilates case that he talks about where this guy he's out, he's by himself, and I don't remember the particulars on it. I'm sure somebody can speak to it in our comments section a great deal more. I mean, there's so many cases that he has that when you read the books, things will stand out to you, but all the details blend together because there's just so many of them. But the guy's walking around, and he all of a sudden realizes that, like, his surroundings have changed, and he hears something behind him say, "Gotcha." And he, I guess, just like leaps, and then all of a sudden everything's normal again. Almost as if something just kind of snuck up and got him somewhere else real quick and thought it had him. And instead of him being shocked, he was able to get out for it that way. Yes. But again, you've, the Pylades rules. Why, if it's a Bigfoot or a dogman and you can't hurt it with gunfire, then why would it care if you were armed, had a personal locator beacon, and if you were with somebody else? Yeah. It would just take all of you. Do you know what I'm saying? Hit your personal locator. If the helicopter shows up, what's it going to do to me? You know? It's again, if it's maybe worried about that escalation, if it's maybe worried about, I'm not necessarily worried about what these people can do to me, but if I'm discovered, I'm worried about what's going to come afterwards.
Yeah.
But that shows real intelligence. But obviously, there's an intelligence behind this. These
aren't
dumb animals, like, operating. There's
These are not apes running through the woods. These are not misidentified bear running through the woods. These are obviously something with a higher level of intelligence. And possibly supernatural abilities.
And that's the thing, is that I think that they kind of hang back and wait. Because people nowadays, modern people are just too sophisticated to really believe in things that go bump in the night.
They're too sophisticated.
Well, I'm just saying that they can't entertain that thought process. They can't entertain the idea of something outside of, they know everything.
Yeah.
This is impossible. I'm going to take bear spray. I'm going to be all right. And you know what? There's people out there that will go, well, you know, I've been out hiking and camping and hunting, a huge portion of my life. I've never seen or had anything happen. And there's a lot of people out there that are like that.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people out there that will go, well, let me tell you. And then there's a lot of people who go out there and just never come back and never find them, or they find them and they were killed and they just don't understand how it happened at this point.
If you can just go into the missing persons database and just see how many hunters and I do a lot of research. I do a lot of research through the databases all the time, and I'm finding, I mean, just going back as long as the records go back, there's people who are still missing, and they went out into the woods and they walked into the woods and they never walked out.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, let's go back to Land Between the Lakes real quick. We've got that family of four that supposedly were killed. You know, the massacre happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's a father, a wife, and then two children, according to the story. You know, they're in a secluded area, and something came in and killed them.
Yeah.
Now, let's look in the same area. There's two people, Martin Groves, and things come up on their camp. Well, they start shooting. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they went toe-to-toe and then got out. And these things weren't able to kill them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, again, if they were impervious to gunfire.
Not for a lack of trying.
Yeah, oh, no, definitely. But that's the thing is that Martin didn't, you know, he didn't hang back. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they responded
in kind, in a
way to that ensured that they got out of there. You know what I'm saying? And then he gets back to report it, and it turns out that a bow hunter has gone missing. That has been torn apart at his camp. You know what I'm saying? Then obviously this guy, for whatever reason, was unable to respond in a manner that Martin and his friend did. You know what I'm saying? And that was the difference between there being two tents found torn and bloody at that point. You know what I'm saying? So if they were impervious to gunfire, if they couldn't be hurt, then what Martin and his friend did that day shouldn't have made any bit of difference at all, and they would have been taken as well. But instead, no, they got out.
I don't think there's universal rules for these things. I mean, I don't think that it's perhaps some creatures are impervious, perhaps some are not.
Best defense, a good offense there, man.
But always be packing.
Yeah,
you know,
be
ready to defend yourself.
I think that's the thing, is that I think if more people went in to the woods and more people had the ability to react like that, you'd have more stories of people coming out going, these things tried to kill me, than people just going missing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I think that's the thing, is that when you get down to it, I think that the Pilates rules, that don't go alone, don't go unarmed, carry a personal locator beacon, I don't think that personal locator beacon really has anything to do with it at all. I think that those three bullet points are indicative of maybe the mindset of a person who's going out.
Oh, for yeah. sure.
And that person is geared for towards, sure. I'm making it back alive. I'm going to do what I've got to do to make it back alive. I am going out with that mindset. And those people are less, they're not as big of targets as people that just go out willingly.
Well, you have the forethought to do all this stuff to prepare for this. You know, so that means you've already anticipated maybe something bad could happen. I mean, it's the same thing with situational awareness when you live in a high crime area or a major city. Joe and I lived in New Orleans, and we were very situationally aware because it was a high crime area. You had to have that mindset that you're not going to be a target. There's studies they've done where they will take people who are, you know, career criminals who are, you know, have robbed people over the years and everything like that.
They know what to look for.
They'll show them photos of people and say, you know, ask them if they would, you know, rob this person. And it's like, yes, no. Statistically, I mean, it came out was that the people that they said, yeah, I would rob this person. Turns out that person had been robbed multiple times. Mm-hmm. That person has been a target. And it's just, I guess it's sort of situational awareness. It's how you carry yourself.
How they think you're going to respond.
How they think you're going to respond.
Because I'm going to tell you right now that if you haven't had a chance to read Martin Grove's book, pick it up and check it out. It's not long, but it's informative and it's a great story about some other stuff that's going on with the LBL.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll actually, you want to put a link in the bottom of the video?
I can put a link in the bio. I'm used to Instagram. I'll put a link in the description below. If you guys want to take a look at that book, buy that off of Amazon. Martin is a great guy. His story is insanely compelling. My friend Katie read the book, and now every time I talk about going back to the LBL, she's like, no, don't go. So,
but I think what happened is that he met Martin and his friend were out hunting in the LBL, and he met earlier in the day a guy that was out bow hunting. And at the end of Martin and his partner's day, their camp's attacked. Mm-hmm. And they, like, again, they go toe-to-toe with these things, you know what I'm saying? When you read his account, it's not one of these podcast creepypasta, you know, serial adventures where there's government agents out getting into machine gun fights with cryptids. It's a couple of guys who are scared but are, you know, have a survival instinct, and they're not willing to go down without a fight, and they get out.
Yeah.
And I think what happened is that... they weren't used to running across people like that down there, obviously. And when they got the bow hunter, whatever the circumstances were, it was different, and they were able to take him, but they weren't able to get Martin. And I think there's more instances of people going missing than there are stories like Martin's where people go,
come face to face with
them and I got out
and get out alive.
They came aggressively at me.
Yeah.
Not chasing a car, not growling, not throwing rocks. These things came at me, wanted to take me. We were able to get out, and this is how we did it. But again, that goes back to can't carry firearms in the LBL unless you're hunting. You know what I'm saying? You can't carry, and a lot of people, even in forests where you can go armed, they don't go armed.
Right.
And they, just like those urban predators, those urban criminals can look at people and pretty accurately judge whether this is a safe target or that's not a safe target. These things out in the woods can probably do the exact same thing.
You know? Absolutely.
Can figure out what they can get. And maybe sometimes they misjudge. You know, in Martin's case, maybe they thought that was going to be a, you know, guys are tired after a long day hunting, and they didn't know what they were getting into. So, but yeah, definitely. There's definitely some parallels between that mindset, that predatory mindset. And again, these things might operate the exact same way.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think they do. I absolutely think they do. It's just,
but again, that shows that ability to reason and to realize and measure risk.
Yeah.
And that's why they went, hey, back in the day, I could, in view of an entire village at the water's edge, snatch somebody and go. Because they have weapons that operate under a very limited range. They don't have a lot of power. I can do this and get away with it safely. Well, now I have to wait for that lone hiker, that hunter who's not paying attention, that kid who separated off his parents, that guy who lives in a rural area that gets a little bit too far from the house.
Yeah.
And that's when I can get them.
I mean, serial killing was a lot easier in the 70s, too.
Exactly, you know? Right. Before, and now, they, you know, it still happens. It's just they had to change their tactics.
And because if
they
got a lot more rare.
Yeah. So it's a good parallel. So
yeah. Like H.H. Holmes couldn't have operated a murder hotel, you know, in Chicago right now. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's technology changes. I think that eyeballs on the subject increases. Mm-hmm. You've got, people are more connected now than ever before. And,
well, you know, that's a good point because there's more awareness now of like, let me temper that. There's more awareness now of these creatures and some of this activity and some of this phenomena. A lot of people don't take it seriously. A lot of people,
That's true.
It's kind of a game. It's like another version of like Harry Potter or Star Wars for them. They like the lore, but they at the end of the day, they don't believe it's real. I mean, but it'll be interesting to see as more people start to take it seriously. And, I mean, there's more people involved in this subject. And there's people that are actually getting out in the field. Everybody's not just kind of looking at YouTube videos and listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see that as more people get out into the field. And
how the phenomenon changes.
How it reacts, you know what I'm saying? How it's adapted a couple times before. How's it going to adapt to this then? So. Yeah.
Wow.
Good stuff, yeah. So
that was a really good conversation.
Yeah, and I guess that we'll end it with this, is that we're very encouraging to people who want to get out and do this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. We want to scare you off of going out into the woods ever. Don't be afraid of going into the woods. Just be prepared before you go to the woods.
Have that mindset. Go with people. Mitigate the risk. And but get out there, man. The more people the more people we've got out there looking for answers, the quicker we'll find them.
Follow those Pilates rules, missing 411 rules. If there was like a drinking game with Hellbent Holler, I think that like where we mention David Pilates or the missing 411 series, mm-hmm. or the rules, take a shot. But just, you know, be prepared before you go out there. We always suggest that you're armed. We suggest you're armed as much as possible.
Personal locator beacons are cheap nowadays, man. So it's the technology that used to be outside of the grasp of just an everyday person. You can get it easily nowadays.
Yep.
So.
And be aware of where you are. Be aware of what's around you. And always be safe when you go out in the woods. Always be safe when you're doing this kind of work. Because we want you to come back. And we want you to come back and tell us your stories.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was cool. So we're going to wrap this up. We've got a little bit of housekeeping we got to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're excited to tell you guys, we are actually going to attend the Dogman Conference in Paris, Tennessee,
mm-hmm. yep.
this coming weekend. We're really excited. We're going to go watch a few of our friends speak.
Yeah, we were kind of on the fence. We don't do a lot of cons or conferences or conventions.
Yeah.
Jesse usually does a presentation at Wild and Weird Con mm-hmm. with our friends.
Which I will be doing a presentation in October at Wild and Weird Con. I'm doing a nighttime event where you can come out and use the equipment. I'll show you how to use our equipment. It's kind of like a little add-on event. That's going to be that Friday before Wild and Weird Con. And then I'll be speaking at Wild and Weird Con on Saturday. But that's a side note. That's in October. So make sure you guys plan to come to that. It's going to be at Chief Logan State Park in Logan, West Virginia. You can get all of your information from wildandweirdwv.com. The guys over there have all the info for that. But I will be speaking at that conference. But this coming weekend.
Yeah, we don't really do a lot of these, but we were kind of on the fence. But, you know, there's so much like negativity and just vitriol and like infighting in this that, you know, if you've got some people whose work you really respect, you should go out of your way to, you know,
absolutely.
Support them, you know.
Yeah.
We want to go support some friends of ours that are speaking there, that are doing some presentations. So we want to go and just kind of, you know, it's important to kind of support those people whose work that you enjoy, whose work that you respect. So we're going to be going down there. I know some of the people that are on our channel have talked about going. So we're going to be down there in the audience with you guys, you know, cheering on some great investigators, some great researchers. You're going to see some people talk that... usually don't like getting involved with the usual conference circuit. Well, you know, they're gonna break with tradition and actually like talk this time. There's gonna be a lot of good information. So we're really looking forward to going and supporting some people that we respect in the field. So,
yeah. We're really excited. Mm-hmm. We're really excited that there's actually a conference for Dogman, because you know, I feel like Sasquatch has just gotten so much attention, and you know, maybe it's Dogman's
share the stage, man. Yeah. Share the stage. So.
Thank you guys for watching and listening to Dark Dive. We really love doing this. We kind of missed a couple of weeks because we both got sick, but mm-hmm. we are feeling awesome now. We're ready to dive in. We're ready for our fall expeditions we have planned out. We're so mm-hmm. excited about.
The podcasts will, not that they've been overly frequent right now, but they're going to obviously, when the heat subsides and the ticks subside, we'll be spending the majority of our time back out in the field again. But we'll still do these when you know, time allows. If there's anything that you'd like to see us discuss or talk about, maybe just leave it in the comments section.
Yeah, leave us a comment below. And then if you have something you guys want to hear us talk about, we will be more than happy to discuss it in our own weird little way.
Yeah.
Also, if you have any Q&A type questions, we might do some Q&A stuff on an upcoming episode. I think that would be cool. You can always email us, hellbitholler@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a story you want to tell us, email us at that same address. We get back to you. We talk to you. We will absolutely get back to you. And we love hearing from you guys. We really appreciate all of the love and all of the support that mm-hmm. you all give us. We love doing this. You guys have no idea what it means to us that you guys can actually share in this passion with us. And we're just so happy to do this. It's really a gift that we can share this with you guys. And we love it. We love doing it.
Yeah.
But you can follow me on Instagram @HellbentJesse. And you can find all of my little updates up there. Follow me for this weekend's festivities. I'm going to be posting all over Instagram for the Dogman Conference. It's going to be fun. I know that we're definitely going to that mini Eiffel Tower that's in Paris, Tennessee.
Always said I'd take you to Paris.
You always said you'd take me to Paris. Jesus. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for joining us. We really appreciate you. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, and turn on your notifications. That way you know when other Hellbent Holler videos are coming out. If you're listening on a podcast aggregator, make sure in addition to listening to the podcast that you go ahead and hit that download button. That helps move us up in the numbers. Go ahead and give us a rating. We only accept 5-star ratings, so if you've got a 4 or below, I'm sorry about that. Go ahead and put that 5-star on there. We really appreciate it. Tell your friends about Hellbent Holler, and we look forward to seeing some of y'all at the Dogman Conference. Mm-hmm. So y'all be safe out there. Get out in the woods. Have a good time. And thank you for joining.
Just be careful.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us on Dark Dive.